Hello and welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing. Shut up. I'm your host, Tom. Not you lot, podders. Him. That demon of darkness, Silent Dave. Anyway, let's go back to the original introduction. Hello and welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing. I'm your host, Tom. And we're back. We're fully rejuvenated and refreshed. By my side, he's no trouble at all. It's the one and only Silent Dave Hutchinson. Ooh, Dave, we're in the final straight. The finish line is in sight and the clock is ticking. Tickets for the final game, David. Have you seen the price of them? Apparently, they're reported to be £50,000 plus. Who can afford that, eh? Don't get me started. I dearly love this club, but whoa there. I don't mind someone making a few quid, but behave yourselves. Someone has to do something about this, surely. On the menu tonight, we'll be catching up with the girls in the WSL and the clashes against Spurs and Manchester City. And there was that leftover, that crucial Champions League return leg against Bayern. In the Premier League, Arsenal had to get past a desperate Leeds side looking to hang on to their Premier League status. We have it all, and we're going to go over it in a packed gun room with the Podketeers.
What else have you got?
There's the Arsenal archive. I'm glad you asked. The latest Arsenal updates and all the usual nonsense, which is basically a blank canvas format for anything else we want to throw in. But first, Mesut Ozil has announced his retirement. Ozil scored 44 goals and provided 79 assists in 254 matches. Where do you sit on the Ozil fence? Are you someone who thinks he's an Arsenal legend? Or did he squander the best years of his career? Should he have won more with players around him like Giroud, Cazorla and Sanchez? We'll look back at Ozil's career and we'll give you our view in the gunroom. Happy birthday!
Happy birthday to you!
Gabriel Jesus and Mikel Arteta. I haven't got their ages. Dave, that was a bit of a faux pas, wasn't it? Since we've been away, the Premier League managers have been falling like MPs after taking a polygraph test. They've been dropping like trousers at a Chippendales gig. The boy wizard of West London, Graham Potter, has been removed from Todd Waltz. Brendan Buck Rogers has been dispatched to a galaxy far, far away from the Leicester High Command. And Antonio Conte, or as we call him, the Chicken Plucker. That's a sort of code for something, isn't it? Has finally escaped the chicken coop. At this rate, we'll have absolutely no one left to ridicule. In 14 years since 2009, the Chavs have sacked 15 managers. They've got through three managers in 2015. Gus Hiddink, Steve Holland and Eddie Newton. And they fired Mourinho twice just for spite in 2004 and 2013. Why not? If you've got all that money, you can sack Mourinho twice. I mean, there's some pleasure in that, surely. And even if you win something, you can get escorted kicking and screaming to the job centre. There's no guarantee a trophy will keep you in the job. Rafa, the Spanish waiter Benitez, won the UEFA Europa League with Chelsea, but was found discarded in a locked supermarket biffa bin after Abramovich wanted an upgrade. Now, that sound effect isn't going to work for everyone, is it, Dave, on this list? The Spanish archer bit I get, elbow, kicked out, sacked. The next one, though, is German, and the one after that is Italian. It's just lazy research, Dave. Anyway, Thomas the Tank Engine Tuchel picked up the Champions League in his debut season and was named FIFA Football Coach of the Year. Not good enough for the Chavs, though, was it? Oh, no. He was found drugged and confused by an inebriated rambler called Douglas McDougall in a lay-by en route to Edinburgh. Roberto Di Matteo, he got an FA Cup and a Champions League, but that wasn't good enough either. They then tossed him into the Gobi Desert from a private plane, just to avoid the compensation payments. Whereas, this is what we've been getting round to, people. And again, third time. Whereas, there have been 20 permanent managers and 8 caretaker managers at Arsenal since 1897. Stuart Houston has managed the club in 2 separate spells as caretaker. Wenger, stand by your bed, was there for the long haul. 22 years, people. You Chavs, no class. Right, before we go to the match, let's give you some stats. Total matches played, 30. Arsenal have won 21. Leeds have won 4. There's been 5 draws. Total score, 89. 66 goal for Arsenal, 23 for Leeds. At the Emirates, there's been 16 games, 13 of which Arsenal have won and 2 of which Leeds have won and 1 draw. In the cauldron, known as Elland Road, it's 14 games, 8 wins to Arsenal, 2 to Leeds and 4 draws.
It's time to enter the gunroom for a natter.
Welcome back after the international flummery. Why they keep interrupting the season is a bit beyond me. We've got everyone with us. I'll introduce Glenn O'Glaser, former senior international correspondent for ITN and political correspondent for Sky News, who stared into the eyes of Vladimir Putin and lifted him to the town. How are you, Glenn? You all right?
I'm very well, yeah. When you look at him, he reaches into your soul and rips out. It's like ice around your heart. It's got a very frightening stare.
Glenn, if you didn't know, is a massive Arsenal fan and we'll be talking about all sorts with him. Jay, how are you?
Yeah, good. Bit tired, but you know it is.
I won't even ask. Paul, you're back again. How are you, sir? You all right?
Yeah.
Return just got back from the match.
Yeah, just got back from the Oscars, just seeing Harry Kane pick as the award for best acting. Yeah, it's all been good, you know?
He's always on his arse, isn't he, really? But Lauren, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. Glad to be back. Glad to see everyone again.
Yeah, 13 days we've had off Podders, and we're going to put that right. We've got a big mixed bag for you. We've got lots from the WSL. We've got the Champions League. We've got Leeds versus Arsenal. So we're going to crack on. We'll catch up with Glenn in a moment. But before we do, the podcast is brought to you by Manscaped.com. And we are promoting the Performance Package 4.0. We're going to give you a code, which you get 20% off. And that code is ARS03. So go to manscaped.com, put that in, and you get 20% off. Right then, Glenn, what have you been up to since we spoke in the dark ages of COVID? Because you couldn't fly anywhere. You had loads of things to do, but you couldn't go outside the door.
No, so I've written 2 books of memoirs, which sounds a bit pompous, but they're not really memoirs.
Love a bit of pomp.
They're called When I Stories. They're anecdotes about life on the road and stuff. So they're I've just got the proofs back today, so they should be published hopefully this summer. And I've also written three books of poetry. Who knew that? Wow. And 2 of them are being published this summer, and then the third one's in the pipeline.
So you're the person that used COVID properly.
Exactly. I'm the one who learned Spanish. Yeah.
Glenn, we speak about Saka every week, so we're going to get your perspective on certain things. So Saka, his development is outrageous. He's just come on leaps and bounds. What have you made of him this season? It's just incredible to watch.
Yeah, phenomenal, isn't it? And it's, you know, he's doing everything. He can run at players, score goals, make the right pass. He's got it all up here. And he's quite physical as well.
I think that was the worry. We were all sort of discussing him. He just looked like a young kid that could get intimidated. But as Jay said a couple of weeks ago, he doesn't take any old nonsense. No. He probably goes for it. While we're on the subject, we spoke about Odegaard where we did a pod, and you said if we get one signature in the summer, has to be Odegaard. Well, that's worked out well, Glenn, hasn't it? What a player.
Fantastic. Brilliant. I mean, he's the new, as far as I'm concerned, he's doing what Ozil should have done but didn't quite manage to do. As far as I'm concerned, he is the new Dennis Bergkamp.
Yeah.
He's that good.
Yeah, he is. Absolutely. Well, it's funny you mentioned Mesut Ozil because we're going to go round the table. Mesut Ozil announced his retirement at the age of 34. Should he be, as many are saying, considered a legend, an Arsenal legend, or could it have been so much more of a career? Let's bear in mind that he had Cazorla, Sanchez along those lineup, and even Giroud. With that lineup, you would have expected more, wouldn't you, Paul?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I think the joy is quite out for Mesut Ozil, isn't it? Because, you know, the flashes are brilliant. I suppose he lacked a certain degree of consistency. I never quite got the criticism that there's certain people like Piers Morgan in particular were always criticised for being lazy, because I always thought his distribution of the ball was excellent at times. And I always kind of thought with Mesut Ozil, he kind of suffered from a bit of an image problem. Like, I mean, you may or may not disagree with me on this, but I've always had the view that Arsenal fans are rated Jack Wilshere really highly. I never quite got Jack Wilshere, I've got to be honest. Whereas Mesut Ozil... Whereas Mesut Ozil was never held in quite the same affection, I didn't think. And I always kind of had this idea that if Mesut Ozil being photographed coming out of Stringfellow's at 3 a.m. with a blonde on each arm and ending up in a scrap of photographers, he would have been much more highly rated than what he was. That's just pure personal opinion here. But Ozil was a really good footballer. And okay, you could take a view. He played for an Arsenal side that arguably was in decline compared to the initial Wenger, invincibles Arsenal team. So you lot are in a far better position to meet your comments there. So I've always liked the guy. I've always a good footballer. So that's just purely a personal view.
Well, this accusation that he was lazy is really unfair. I mean, it's just the way he played. He did strong. Look at the stats. He was covering more ground than pretty much any other player on the pitch in almost every game he played for us. So it's just his style. You know, it looked lazy. It was lackadaisical, but it wasn't lazy. I also think he wasn't a legend, but not quite.
You know what they call that lazy style? Gifted. It's just gifted. And he makes it look easy, and then everyone gets the hump about that. Lauren, some people think he was a luxury we couldn't afford. What's your slant on Mesut Ozil? How will you remember him?
Yeah, positively, I think, overall. I always remember that sign, and, you know, to me, it's kind of, until this point, it's probably the biggest signing that we've got in the Emirates era, let's say. I think he's definitely a player who up until this point has, you know, he's really shaped Arsenal's story in the Emirates. He's been a very, very, overall positive as well. Obviously, it didn't end very well, but look, you know, Arteta's he's very ruthless when it comes to the big egos. We've seen that time and time again. And, you know, at the end of the day, it was what was best for the team. But I don't think we should let that hinder just how great Mesut Ozil was for Arsenal. And, you know, that kind of player, I always remember the day he signed. It just didn't feel real to me. No, it was so crazy.
Jaw hit the ground. Yeah. Right at the 11th hour, Vena suddenly popped up with, Mesut Ozil.
yeah. So I think that's probably the main memory I have of him was the first day he arrived, and then everything that came after that was, it had its ups and downs. But overall, I think we have to be grateful for just seeing a player of his quality in an Arsenal shirt when, as Paul mentioned, it was an Arsenal slightly in decline at the time. It was really great to see a player of that quality coming in, and it was I think overall it was a positive time for him. And I think seeing people's reactions, even his reaction to it, it was. It kind of put a positive spin on what had been a soured story, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Jay, I think the connection between him and Sanchez was amazing. I mean, when they were on song together, it was a beautiful thing to watch. And then when you took Sanchez out, Sanchez buggered off to that lot. It wasn't quite the same for both players, was it? It was like the link had gone, the connection, the telepathy.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, it's interesting. When he was at Real, he had a very similar relationship with Ronaldo. And when, I don't know if you remember that, but when he left Real, there was, you had players obviously like Ronaldo, Sergio Ramos, and a couple of the others all basically coming out publicly saying just how disappointed they were that Mesut had left. Obviously, we're all over the moon that he was signing. And it's also interesting in Mesut's book, he goes into detail about the transfer and how it all came about signing for Arsenal. And he said that Wenger tried to sign Mesut from Schalke before he went to Real Madrid. Obviously, Mesut went over to Real. Obviously, we all know Real are, whether we like it or not, they're a slightly bigger club than Arsenal, So Mesut went to go and sign, and then there was a contract dispute. And Mesut remembered Wenger's approach, got in touch, and the transfer was made really quickly. He had that bond with Ronaldo. And yeah, you're right. When Sanchez left, I suppose before Mesut signed, we were going through a trophy drought. The first season Mesut signed, we won the FA Cup. And I think he was the type of player that, I agree with Glenn, I don't class him as a legend. However, I personally loved him, really enjoyed watching him play. Technically a brilliant footballer. Was never going to do your defensive work. He was just never that kind of player. And Wenger ultimately was, I suppose, the right coach, because he wouldn't expect Mesut really to do the tracking back in those hard yards. But it was a shame that it ended badly. But not for me, a legend, not for me, but still a great signing who definitely had a positive effect on the players around him and made them better. And World Cup winner, you know, he won trophies all over Europe. So successful. I suppose the one thing that the negative side to him from my point of view was that he did miss a lot of away games, these injuries or these, you know, he the sickness or whatever excuse would come out on quite regularly on away games. It seemed to pop up, especially towards the back end of his Arsenal career. But look, top player, and just a shame that it sort of ended badly. But it's easy to forget as well. Just one more thing on Mesut. You know, Mikel Arteta had to deal with Mesut, didn't he, at the start? He had to get rid of him, and it was such a difficult decision that ultimately proved right. Because at the time, you know, a lot of the fan base was calling for Mikel to bring Ozil back because we were struggling a little bit, but he didn't, and obviously he was proved right. But top player, not a legend for me, though. I agree with Glenn.
If I was going to choose a legend from that time, it would be Alexis Sanchez or Santa Cazorla above Ozil.
March 31st saw us celebrate the life and career of David Rocky Rocastle. Glenn, your memories on such a cult figure, came through the system, came out of the academy. What a beautiful player. David Dean said, phoned his wife when he saw him in training and said, "Hey, I've got this young lad. He plays like a Brazilian."
I think he was way ahead of his time. I think that's the key to appreciating him. You see, you know, not plenty, but quite a few players now who play that way, but not too many were doing it when he was doing it. He was just ahead of his time, gifted, talented, graceful, but also when he needed to be deadly. Great, great, great player.
Jay, overwhelming memories of David Rocky Rocastle. Have you got a goal, a special moment? What's going through your mind when you think of him?
I mean, mostly, I suppose it was. I mean, I was only young, but I think it's his bond with Ian Wright that has lasted the test of time. You know, Ian Wright. Obviously, they were close. Came from the same area in London, and they had such a strong bond, and Rocastle had such a big influence on Wright's life, and that's obviously carried on. You know, Wright still publicly talks about his relationship with Rocastle, and great player, like Glenn said, ahead of his time. And I think that the solo effort at Old Trafford, you know, great goal.
That's exactly the one that I think of.
Yeah. It was just, I think as well, you know, like Rocastle, every time his anniversary of his death comes round, you know, he's so, you know, universally liked across every fan base. And I suppose that's a testament to what, you know, the kind of human that he was and footballer that he was. So
it kind of sums up the Hale End vibe as well, doesn't he? It's a pure Arsenal player coming out of those traps. Paul, cast your mind back. David Rocastle, got any memories, thoughts for us?
Yeah, I mean, fantastic footballer. I totally agree with what Glenn said there. Classy football as well. And as you said as well, Jay, you know, he always kept his links with Ian Wright. The two deep friendship over the years. I've read Ian Wright's book as well, and he always speaks so highly of Rocastle. And it's just great that they came, you know, like the first wave, you know, to come through into that George Graham team. You know, and I always remember in particular, you know, Rocastle's performance in that stunning 2-0 win at Anfield to stop Liverpool winning the double, for which I am eternally grateful. But Rocastle was just a superb footballer, you know, and I don't quite know the background why him and George Graham fell out. I think a lot of Arsenal fans think he left the club far too soon. He went to play for Leeds and Chelsea, so he's still a really top quality footballer. And it's just, you know, such a tragic way, you know, that his life was cut so cruelly short, because he would have made, I'm sure, a superb coach. He would have made a contribution to Arsenal still. He was still around. He still had a lot to offer football. And it was, you know, such a tragedy that we lost him at such a young age. And I don't know what you think, Jerry, but I never quite understood why Arsenal let him go. When, to me, he was at the peak of his footballing powers. I know if George Graham took against you, then that was it, basically. It wasn't it. But Rocky Rocastle, fantastic footballer, fantastic role model as well. And it's right in fitting that the anniversary of his demise is celebrated every year by the Arsenal fans.
I was speaking to a friend of mine. He said why George Graham didn't like him was he was more gifted than he was. He was a better player. And I thought, well, there might be some truth in that. Lauren, you're far too young, aren't you? You're too young in the to experience Mr. Oakcastle. It's probably all videos and whatnot, isn't it? Right there, let's move on to the Leeds game. We didn't really know what side would turn up. Let's take you through the team. It was 4-3-3. Ramsdale, White, Holding. Holding was in because Saliba's injured. Gabriel Zinchenko, Martin Odegaard, Thomas Partey, Granit Xhaka, Trossard, Jesus, which was nice to see him back, and Martinelli. Jay, what did you make of the lineup after this infernal, annoying international break that nobody wanted?
Yeah, I suppose there was no real news about Saliba, was there? Or I couldn't find any, you know, other than he wasn't going to make the squad. Rob Holding was back in, and I mean, I said on the last pod, I think it was a game that, you know, we should be looking to win, and you know, Leeds made it difficult for us, especially in the first half. But you know, our quality showed in the end, and our strength showed in the end.
If you're wondering what Glenn's doing, he's actually keeping an eye on the Chelsea Liverpool game for us as well. How's that going, Glenn? How's the game going?
No, it's mediocre, isn't it? So,
we don't care anyway, do we? We don't care who wins out of that one.
Just look on Holding. I mean, I think he's done really well. He's not let us down, as Fenner always used to say, just because he only got 2 million. You know? He's actually stepped up. He hasn't done anything really catastrophic so far. And, you know, Saliba's boots are not easy to fill, but I think he's done all right. Mm-hmm. It was great to see Jesus back. And we scored, you know, 4 goals for the second game in a row.
Right, let's get to that game. It was, as you say, first half was a decent contest. It's quite a sort of even thing until we opened up in the second half. They must have thought they'd get something out of the game in the first half. But 11 minutes, Jesus failed to hit the target just outside the box. Xhaka chipped over a ball to the middle of the box. Jesus was leaning back. It was a little bit too short for that gig. 33 minutes, penalty claim. Jesus jinks into the box. Aimling goes to the ground. This was a dodgy one when I was looking at it because his leg kind of came up twice. And the second one caught him on the knee.
I thought it was penalty. I think, you know, we often talk about things even out over the season. There have been numerous occasions when we talk on this pod about more obvious penalties that Arsenal haven't been given. So I think you take these decisions when they go in your favour. Yeah, I mean, and Ailey had 2 goes at him as well, didn't he? So, you know, he just totally got it wrong. And I never realised I'd forgotten that Ailey trained at Arsenal when he was a kid. He's at the Arsenal Academy as well. That kind of passed me by. But I mean, you can just see the difference that Jesus has made coming back into the team, because I think the way Arsenal coped without Jesus not playing has been admirable, because first off, Nkesia stepped up and scored the goals. When he got injured, Martinelli stepped up and scored the goals. Then Trossard steps up and starts providing the assist. So the whole team has kind of adapted and, you know, coped with the absence of Jesus. And now he's come back into the team. Now, for the final nine games of the season, that is such a positive boost for Arsenal to have Jesus, because he terrorised the Leeds defence, I thought. And also, it wasn't just his attacking play. There were times in the second half, he was getting back, he was winning tackles by the touchline. He won a throw when he kicked up one of the Leeds players, got all the crowd really psyched up as well. So it's just all around contribution to the team as well. And, it, you know, I've said this before, I could watch Jesus' movements off the ball all day, because the way he finds space, the way he looks for the gaps, the way he comes off the defenders, it's just a masterclass in how to give defenders a hard time. But yeah, definitely a penalty in my book.
Plus winning mentality, you know, he's got that. You know, he's won the league, you know, like Zinchenko. So I think that spreads throughout the whole dressing room as well. It's that kind of, you know, winning mentality, that kind of mindset and attitude. Undoubtedly has.
It's great to see, as you say, movement is unbelievable, because every time he gets the ball, I mean, with that penalty, he sort of stop and go, change position. It's frightening. Anyway, 35 minutes, staggered penalty straight down the middle. 47 minutes, Zinchenko pokes the ball down the left to Martinelli. He wriggles and skips past Ailey. Jay, take us up. It was a Ben White surprise, wasn't it? Running into the box.
Yeah, he
came from nowhere.
Yeah, and it a great finish from White. I just wanted to say that in the first half, Ramsdale made a couple of really good saves, and he Leeds were dangerous on the break. We weren't really at it in the first half, I didn't think. Leeds were pressing us high up and they were creating chances. And I just wanted to just highlight the fact that, you know, Ramsdale, ultimately for all of our great attacking play in the last seven games, you know, since the City defeat and all the goals that we've scored, Ramsdale's been absolutely spot on, hasn't he? And he's been so switched on. And, you know, because for large, you know, for pretty much each of the games, we're in large portions of those games, we're in control. We're dominating possession, and he has to stay switched on. And I just wanted to say, you know, against Leeds, I thought he was superb. And his form all season, you know, has been great. You know, another thing about Ramsdale that I just wanted to say was, you know, since the Spurs game where he had that sort of altercation with the supporter, there's been a lot less of him doing the winding up of the supporters, if that makes sense. And I just think that, you know, inadvertently, I think that idiot that attacked him or kicked him or whatever has actually done us a favour, and it's actually switched him on even more. And he's become, you know, even more alert and less bothered about, you know, reacting to the crowd or you know, his mind being elsewhere. He's a lot more switched on. And on Saturday, you know, he did. I know ultimately he did what he was supposed to do, but he made some really good saves. And he's going to be key, isn't he? You know, we talk about, you know, the obvious players, you know, like the Odegaard, like we were talking about earlier, and the parties and Jesus, but Ramsdale again, you know, in these games, he has to be switched on, and he was fantastic. But yeah, excuse me, going back to the goal, great work from Martinelli, played it across the box, and Ben White, like he did, was it the Bournemouth game he scored?
Yeah, it was.
Great finish, and not bad for somebody that doesn't watch football.
There's a bit of telepathy going on. Because what I thought when I watched that was he knew where Ben White was going to be at that far post. Just kind of put it up, you know, absolutely on the right spot, knowing that he's going to run in. How did he know that? Maybe they've been practicing at the training or something.
It's like one of those things they've been working on the training ground, isn't it? You know, you come in late. It was almost like a Aaron Ramsey type of thing, just appear in the box at the last minute type of thing. And he rattled that bar. I was well up for that. So from that point onwards, Lauren, we started dominating the game. 55 minutes in a sublime move. Arsenal pick up a third. Holding puts in a short pass to Jesus, who lays it off to Trossard. This was a great bit of movement from Trossard. I mean, he again, going forward, stopping. Something that Zinchenko does really well as well. You know, he considers his options. And Trossard got away from Koch, we have to say it again, lashing a low cross to Jesus, who fired his effort into the net. He seems to be back with a vengeance, Lauren Jesus. He seems to have got over this injury. And he's got to be so, so massively crucial to this 9-game running.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, when we talk about this goal, we have to mention Trossard. It was an absolutely beautiful bit of play. What a signing. And we're going to say it every week now until every week he's with the club, I believe. What a signing, you know. It looks like he's been there.
It's just a master forever. Strike, isn't it?
It's perfect. I've never met a better match, you know. It's as if he was just made to play for Arteta's Arsenal. It's fantastic. You know, what he brings to the team, you know, and I think maybe that's perhaps what Jesus was missing earlier on in the season when he was having a bit of a goal drought as well, was that player who's able to pick those really short passes in the box and always know where he is and create a bit of space for him. But you know, Trossard's assist was amazing, but it was Jesus's goal, and I'm really delighted that he got a goal from open play as well. You know, he came out of his first start back in the Premier League with a brace. It's exactly what he needs. There was a lot of questions hanging over him before he went into the World Cup. And, you know, it's the perfect response. And it's the response of someone who knows what he has to do to win a league. So it's very, very positive and exciting to have him back in the starting 11, you know. And when Nketiah was in for him, we kind of said it's going to be tough for him to get his place back. But you know, they're two completely different players, and what he brings to the starting 11, as everyone here has said already, his movement off the ball, that desire, it's exceptional. So it's going to be exciting to see what else, what goals come up next in the upcoming games.
I think you're right. Trossard is, for me, the bargain of the transfer window. I mean, it's just ridiculous how good that lad is. I knew he was good, but he seems to be the final piece of the puzzle that could go right away across the front line. Jay, if you were Jesus, would you be, as a former striker, sir, a former striker, would you be a little bit hacked off that you got hooked off?
No, I think he's, although he's not a veteran by any means, but he's been around long enough. You know, he's had some injuries, you know, when he had a serious injury at City, and he's been out for a while this season. He knows the score, you know, like he's going to be absolutely key to the running, and he knows that. So he needs to be managed correctly. And I just want to just second to what Lauren said. It was great seeing him get that goal from open play, and in and around the box, he's so lively and his movement is so good. It really is. You could watch it all day, and he's so difficult to mark.
I have.
Because he picks up those spaces just in between the defence and midfield, and he drifts in and around, and so quick. And I mean, what's he on now? Is it 8 goals this season? 8 or 9, you know, if he could get towards, you know, head towards the 13, 14, you know, could be the difference between what we all really want and not, you know, getting it and not getting it. Because, you know, at Anfield, I'm sure we're going to talk about that game, you know, they've got a back four, or, you know, especially their centre-backs, whoever they play at the minute aren't the best and they're not the quickest, and he could be absolutely key. His movement in and around the area, nipping in there and getting into those spaces could be absolutely key. So it's really, really encouraging to have him back. Trossard's form, like we've all said, I mean, he's been a lot better than I thought he would. You know, I mean, we all saw what he could do at Brighton, and he scored a lot of goals, but his seamless introduction and, you know, his assists are just going through the roof, aren't they? So yeah, long may it continue.
Glenn, we're going to come to you in a sec for the Odegaard goal. Sorry, carry on.
Me, I was just going to say, we could have paid 80 million for Mudrek and Mudrek. Mudrek-ing. You know, and we got Trossard. And what, you know, look at how the guy's done at Chelsea. He's not fitted into the Premier League particularly well, whereas Trossard was already the already made article. And, you know, I agree with what Lauren and everyone else is saying, that it looks like he's been playing for Arsenal for years. He just plays that Arsenal way. It's such as, you just said, it's a seamless fit. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Right, let's go to the 76th minute, Paul. You're going to shine some light on why we're so inept at the back, because yet another ball was given away. The goal shouldn't have been, really. Harrison rushes forward with the ball, given too much space. No one went in, Paul. What's going on with the Arsenal? We're just shipping some really shoddy, shitty goals.
Well, I think the goal happens at a time when the game's won, isn't it? You know, so you can understand the players aren't quite as, they're not quite as alert defensively as what they would be if the game is balancing 0-0 with 15 minutes to go. Yeah, it was. It was almost like the Arsenal defence in particular, were around the edge of the box, looking at Christensen and almost like inviting them to take the shot, thinking nothing's going to come of it. And to be fair, if Van Hintz and Zinchenko, nothing would have come because Ramsey had it covered anyway. So it was unlucky to do. It's a wicked deflection, and it just takes it completely out of Ramsdale's path. And I totally echo what Jay was saying before, by the way. I think Ramsdale, since that incident at Tottenham, which, you know, he's been so reliable, and some of the saves he made in the first 10 minutes or so of the game at the weekend, you know, kept Arsenal, kept the scores level, and then that laid the platform for Arsenal to go and win the game. You don't have to see the goal at any stage in the match, because, you know, if you had a scenario where this title just had a goal difference, little mistakes like that could end up costing you dearly. So you want to get the clean sheet. And it was quite good as well, wasn't it, that, you know, City were on the high from beating Liverpool 4-1, but Arsenal respond with a 4-1 win, so City don't gain on the goal difference either. So I thought that was quite a crucial factor also. But yeah, it's just, You know, it's, I think most Leeds fans in that situation would not have backed Christensen to score. And I think it really is down to the Arsenal defence backing off. And it's just a wicked deflection. And there really is nothing to do about that.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. Ramsdale was beside himself. Yeah. If Lux could kill, there'd be about three defenders gone. Glenn, 84 minutes, my goal of the match. Another illustration. I've come to you, Glenn, because we are firmly in the old Odegaard camp when they were saying it was a waste of money. There we were, pitching away for him. Saka gets down the right flank before playing it to Odegaard, who's free. And the Arsenal captain chips. What a sublime ball for Granit Xhaka. It's just there, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's been another revelation since Arteta got playing Xhaka further forward. You know, he's been a totally different player. Because he's not a defensive midfielder, he doesn't need to make those stupid tackles and get some cards. And he's actually scoring goals and causing a lot of problems for defences. Great to see. And again, I think it's almost like there's a telepathy going on. This team really understand each other. And so they kind of know where they're going to be at any given moment, which is, you know, unusual. Fantastic. Hasn't happened for us for years. So it's great to see.
I was kind of thinking when Odegaard, he took one, the ball's at his feet, he took one look and he just popped that ball across. And I thought, what's Xhaka doing there? Because the difference between what he was in the past and what he is now is unbelievable. Right there, let's just wrap this up with the stats. We'll do Arsenal first, then Leeds. 13 shots for Arsenal, 7 for Leeds. 6 shots on target for us, 5 for them. I don't remember that. 68% possession for us, 32% for them. 636 passes for us, 307 for them. 85% pass accuracy for us, 71% for them. Right, Lauren, we're going to push on now. We've got quite a bit to get through, so bear with us, chaps. First off, it's the 1-5 away win with a dominant performance in the North London Derby. You said last time out that this type of result was to be expected, but I mean, it was an incredible performance, wasn't it, under the circumstances?
It was. It really was good. Yeah, we just came out, we looked the better team throughout the game. You know, obviously they were playing at home, but there was no atmosphere. There was nothing. It was really funny, actually, because, you know, obviously it was the men's international break. So a lot of the teams were taking the opportunity to play in, you know, the men's stadium. So games were held in Old Trafford and such. But Spurs decided against that and they had a rugby match in the Tottenham Stadium instead. So, you know, serves them right. But no, it was a great win. It was a comfortable win. 5-1, you know, it was just deserved win, I would say, and it put us in a really good position going forward because it was a tough run of matches. I'm going over this very quickly because there's much more exciting games that we have to discuss.
Yeah, I think the thing is, it's the women's seasons, WSL season, is like just punctuated with big spaces and it takes the momentum out. And this is what I think about the World Cup and this international shenanigans. It's just stop, start. And to actually, with the injuries that we've got, to get any momentum going forward, it's really, really tough. Anyway, let's just walk through that. Blackstenius, after 5 minutes, a seemingly innocuous pass, but I thought the defender was going to wrap up. But Blackstenius attacked the goal from just inside the box like a rocket. It really was a blistering thud. Falled after 29 minutes from just outside the D, which it kept low. And then there was this 38-minute penalty, Beth England offering some hope to those poor bin dippers. Do you think it was a penalty, Lauren?
Yeah, probably was, but I don't want to admit that.
Well, I'll say, you know, it's 5-1. What do you want? I'm not bothered. McCabe goes to ground eventually, and Kim Little, 66 minutes, slots the ball home from the spot. Palova catches Spurs flat and open to provide a ball for the predatory Ford. A bit of good fortune going in there after 70 minutes. Manon. I mean, I love this girl. I mean, she's something special, isn't she?
Incredible.
And great goal with the benefit of a deflection. Gives the keeper no chance, but it was something of a special goal, wasn't it?
And we're going to, I'm sure, speak about her other goal as well in a bit as well. She's on some run of
form. She's putting them together, isn't she, bless her?
Not too bad, not too bad.
Right then, let's crack on with the Bayern game, which was in the balance at 1-1. We had to bring it home, and we did. Were you surprised at the standout first half performance, Lauren? We'll talk about the goals, and obviously Manon will get a good mention.
I wasn't surprised. We obviously lost the... So it was our away game. They were playing at home in the first leg, and to be honest, we completely dominated in the second half. We should have come away with the win in that game as well. But, you know, we didn't. There was a few bad decisions on the night from the referee, got a bit unlucky, but I think from that game the girls took a lot of confidence going to the Emirates. You know, this is a really, really good Bayern team as well, but we were able to absolutely, you know, 1-0 away from home, we kept them pretty tame, and like I said, we should have had more we should have really come away with the win in that game. So I think, you know, there was a lot of confidence going into the game, so I wasn't surprised, but I was happy with it for sure.
Right, well, let's walk us through that team for the Bayern game, Lauren. You got your sheet
there? I do, I have it here. So we had Zinsberger was in goal, Maritz was at right back, we had the classic pairing at the back of Williamson and Raffaele, and Katie McCabe was playing left back, Kim Little, Manum and Valti were in the midfield, Blaxinia started up front with January signing Palova on the right, and Caitlin Ford, who was unstoppable at the moment, on the left.
Lauren, it was a big blow, just around 10 minutes, Kim Little was fouled through on goal, forced to limp off. I mean, that's a disaster, isn't it? Like, we're just racking up the body count.
It's pretty horrendous, yeah. I mean, she's arguably our most important player, our captain as well. The wealth of experience that she has in the midfield, you know, in all the competitions with the relatively young team around her, it's really crucial that we have a player like her on the pitch. Unfortunately, it looks like a pretty nasty injury, so we don't know how long she'll be out for.
Yeah, as I say, we'll be lucky to get 11 players on the pitch soon at this rate. As good as we were in attack in first 45, we had to dig in for the second 45. Defensively, the girls pulled off at quite an all-round performance, didn't they? Let's talk about your thoughts on the game and if we can go all the way in this competition, because we are now, I think there's two English teams, is the other one Chelsea in the semi-finals, yeah. Which is an incredible achievement, and especially with all the backlog of injuries and stuff.
Absolutely. No, the game itself was amazing. I mean, I'm not sure if anyone else has seen the goal from Manum on the day. It was stunning. What a backheel pass classic Arsenal goal. You know, classic Arsenal goal. It was all over my Instagram, my Twitter. Incredible goal. Probably one of the goals of the season, I would say. It was a great performance. Look, it's a tough competition, but it's our first time in the semi-finals in a decade, I believe. So it's something to be very, very proud of. Chelsea, obviously, the other English team in the semi-finals as well. Chelsea face Barcelona. Arsenal are going up against Wolfsburg in our semi-final. Do we have a chance? Sure. I didn't think we had a chance against Bayern. I didn't think we had a chance against Lyon.
Oh, Lauren, write us off, please. Write us off again, because that's where we come from.
It always seems to work. It always seems to work. Look, I honestly think the best any team can do at the moment is getting to the final against Barcelona. That women's team is probably the best team in Europe, hands down, full stop at the moment. I don't see anyone getting past them. But, you know, if we could get to a final against Barcelona, I would be very, very happy with that result.
I tell you what I do like is I sort of watch both games, the women and the men's, and I think, oh, that's a cracker of a goal. And then you get another cracker of a goal and you think, oh, I can't choose between them now. Manum strike after 19 minutes, lovely slick play, precise passing down the right, both in and out of the box, and then it pinged to a brilliant. It seems like 25 minutes, I think it was. Sorry, I got rambly there. 25 minutes, the ball wouldn't go out and Bayern gave up defending. Massive pockets of space on both flanks. Palova drops it from right to left. McCabe, in a cornfield of space, we're just painting that, we're embellishing it, rushes forward to the byline, pops it across to a rising Blaxinius. There could have been so many more goals, couldn't there, Lauren? Williamson, Blaxinius, Manon, Blaxinius again. A header was kept up from Blaxinius at the end. Best move for me was Palova, backheel to Manon. Ford scoops it over. Absolutely sublime. Another blow, though, we got McCabe injured her left foot in the dying stages of the win. I mean, they're falling apart, these girls. What are they doing?
They are. And look, my heart was in my absolute throat when McCabe went down. She's not a player that goes down injured easily. You know, she was down for a while. After the match, she was hopping around the pitch with a boot on her foot and in crutches, only to come back and play the game on Sunday and have a player of the match performance. I don't know what she's made of, but can we get more players like her, please? That's what we need in the team.
It's just like every time I look round, like we've got to lose someone else. It's really quite annoying. Right, let's do the stats. Arsenal and then Bayern, 44% possession for us, 56 for them, 14 shots for us, 4 for them. That's the dominance, isn't it, there? 8 shots on target for us, 1 for them, 6 corners for us, 7 for them, 8 fouls, 9. So a bit feisty.
Feisty, for sure. A lot of cards flying.
Lastly, Lauren, before we get out of breath and have some sort of, you pass out or something, Arsenal versus Manchester City saw the Mancunians completely in control in the first half, and they deservedly took the lead from Shaw, the Jamaican girl, wasn't she, which found the corner of the Arsenal net from a flowing move at around the 5th-minute mark. What a goal that was. If you haven't seen it, go onto YouTube, because it's the most perfect header you will ever see. Lauren Hemp could have added to the scoreline, but sliced it over the bar. They had us on the rope for the opening 45 minutes, but like the Bayern game, we came out fighting for the 3 points. In the second half, Arsenal set about wrenching the game out of City's hands. In the 62nd minute, Freedom Alam again. Walk us through that.
Yeah, it was a great goal. It wasn't a great goal, but it was a good move, you know.
It was.
I think Katie McKay put a good ball into the box and there was a bit of scrambling for it, and Manham got a bit lucky. But you know what? She scored some crackers, so we'll let her have a scrappy one every now and again. And again, look, the most important thing was getting the goal at the end of the day. And, you know, from the second half, we really picked it up. I think we were a bit leggy from the game against Bayern. Obviously, the amount of injuries didn't help.
I'm surprised.
And I thought, you know, Katie McCabe starting was a bit of a risk given, you know, the gravity of the situation that we'd seen 4 days prior. But, you know, second half, we came out like a different team. And, you know, I think the home fans helped as well. There was a really good drive in the second half to get the goals that got us the points in the end.
Yeah, we spoke about Manham. Let's cover the last goal. 74th minute, McCabe made sure of the vital 3 points by collecting short corner and thundering a shot into the net. City piled on the pressure late on, but couldn't find a way through. Let's just be clear here, Podders. What this is such an achievement. It was City's first WSL defeat in 15 games, a run stretching back to September when they lost to Chelsea. Ford was injured. Any news on Ford?
No, so
wounded, isn't it? An episode of Castle.
Crazy, isn't it? It's crazy. I have the longer list of injuries than currently available players. But no, we actually have a international break now for the women. Again, chopping and changing throughout the season. It's very, very frustrating. But that means obviously Ford won't be joining up with the Australian team due to her injury. But apart from that, no more news. So it's a bit similar to the Saliba situation we had. All we know is that she won't be joining her international team. But other details on the injury, we don't know as of yet.
Jay, it's interesting you mentioned about Aaron Ramsdale kind of calming down his interaction with the crowd, because there was that terrible news about a 24-year-old Spanish player, Perez, who was killed, stabbed by a fan. Surely that plays on everyone's mind. And I just hope that security are mindful. We don't want a spate of these things going on. We've already had Jack Lee Grealish pushed to the ground, slapped around the back of the head and all that nonsense. And then Ramsdale attacked. We want to make sure that these players are safe. You know, what Ramsdale does, not everyone's going to find that acceptable, but it's just banter. And that's what it should be. I mean, when I first started going to the terraces and stuff like that, it was acceptable. It was what everybody did. You give players stick and they just got on with it. But Jay, it is a big concern, isn't it, in the modern game now, especially after that.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the amount of games that, you know, the amount of games that go on each weekend, you know, these, although the Spurs supporter was well out of order, you know, these are very rare. These aren't regular occurrences, are they, where players are getting attacked or whatever, you know, these are rarities. But yeah, you're right. It should just be a game of football, but it isn't that, is it? We all care. about it a hell of a lot more than just a game of football, but it's just how far you can take it. I mean, I didn't know anything about that situation that you mentioned where the fella got stabbed. So, I mean, that's just bonkers, isn't it? But I mean, we've all been to football matches recently, you know, you're not going to get a knife into a football stadium anytime soon, you know, well, the games that I've been to anyway. So, look, there's a fine line. What you don't want is you don't want players to have their, you know, their personality sort of coached out of them. You want them to be characters and you want these characters in the game. But ultimately, I mean, I just, you know, we mentioned it earlier, you know, there has been a change in Ramsdale's attitude and approach since that incident. And for me, it's switched him on even more. So that's a good thing. But you don't want personality being taken out of the game, do you? But yeah, I mean, that was a tragic, you know, that story you just mentioned. That's awful. We can't.
I didn't know about it either. But as Jay just said earlier, that was a blessing in disguise for him, that first time, because as you said, it seems to have made Ramsdale more focused. However, having said that, I think it's a shame because there's nothing, you know, he clearly enjoys winding up, especially Spurs fans, opposition fans. And, you know, why not? It's all part of the fun, part of the theatre. It is part of the game.
You know? So it pays well as well, Glenn, because Leeds threw 17 quid at him. So he's like a nice little side earner, isn't he? Brilliant. Hey, go there, watch a game of football from your girl. Don't get involved in the action. And go back with 17 quid and a nice big fat check.
We were talking about Meza earlier. You remember his... he was brushing the badge at White Hart Lane, you know, to the Spurs supporters. You know, you got Walcott's 2-0 when he's being
called up.
Yeah. and there'll be loads more. But you don't want that. You don't want that taken out of the game, do you? Because it adds to it, you know. I remember, I mean, as you guys know, my wife, she's big Leicester fan, and I don't know if you'll remember, Lauren, but Robbie Savage used to be awful at it. You know, he would be jumping up and down, winding up supporters, and this, you know. But you want those characters in the game.
Jay,
you know?
How did he ever become a professional footballer? What happened?
Well,
there?
He's one of those players where if he played for you, you loved him. I presume you absolutely loved him because he threw himself into challenges and he was committed and, you know, he always gave his all. But, you know, when you were on the opposite side, or the, you know, you didn't like him, he did used to wind you up. But decent player, but you know, characters all down the years. Brian Clough was another one, wasn't he? You know, he was, you know, probably the biggest character of all in the English game. And you wonder how he'd get on in this day and age where, you know, personality and your public image is scrutinized so much. But you still want those characters. You don't want it to be. You don't want those to be taken out of the game.
Well, there's a fantastic piece with Brian Clough. You remember when there was like a ground invasion and they all started running on. He started slapping people about. I mean, you try and get away with that nowadays. He was really giving them the finger, slapping them around the head. Get off. Unbelievable.
My favourite Brian Clough quote is, on paper, we were the better team. Unfortunately, the game was played on grass.
I love Brian Clough. He was absolutely excellent. He was everything that was good about football at that time. And he took very ordinary teams, unfashionable teams, and he got unfashionable players. And they all somehow went together and created legends at Derby and Nottingham Forest. I mean, Forrest really got on the map when Brian Clough there. Sorry, Potter's rambling on a bit. Let's have a look at the Liverpool game, which is coming up thick and fast. Paul, we're going to start with you because you're the other side of the divide. Liverpool been very patchy this season, but they've still got the tools to do the job. And we don't really know which Liverpool is going to turn up. What's your thoughts on this game?
Well, I think it's the next four games to me decide Arsenal's season. You know, away at Liverpool, away at West Ham, home against Southampton, away at City. I think, you know, come out of those four games with a total of 9 points, and I think that, you know, the league is looking pretty secure. Yeah, Liverpool. I mean, They're very inconsistent, but at home, they're still quite a formidable opposition to play against. And I think that the crowd's going to be really up for this game because you know, they'll want to see Liverpool defeat the champions elect at Anfield. But I think once again here, you know, that Arsenal, you know, it's a real good chance here for Arsenal. And Arteta, with his Everton connections, is going to want to get results at Anfield as well. So
best of both worlds, Paul.
It is, yeah. And obviously, you know, every Everton fan will be rooting for Arsenal, you know, because you know, most Everton fans want Arsenal to win the league because you'll stop City winning the league. And if City win the league this time, the equal Everton's number of title wins. So we can still play with a bigger team than City at the moment, which I love. But anyway, digressing here. No, it's going to be a fascinating contest. And I'm not quite sure the best way to approach it. I can see Saka absolutely having a field day against Terence Trent D'Arby in Liverpool defence. I can see him just turning him inside out. And as you said before, Jay, I think Jesus up against Matic and Van Dijk. Well, there's only one winner there. It has to be Jesus. So I think what Arsenal have to do is not concede the first goal. I think if you could get the first goal, that gets the crowd up and gets everyone motivated, and you'll get a different performance from them. So I think it's almost like it's not quite like the 89 game, but it's a game where you think Arsenal just need to contain Liverpool at the start, just let them burn themselves out, and then start to impose yourselves on the game. Sacking in particular. And I think Trossard got a hat trick last time playing Anfield for Brighton. So once again, he's going to be a key player in that game as well. But Liverpool defensively have had an awful season. They've had a really poor habit to concede the first goal. If Arsenal get the first goal, they go on and win this game quite comfortably, I think. But it's crucial for them to get the first goal. A draw at Anfield is not the worst result because it keeps the momentum going. But Arsenal, the form team, you've won the last seven Premier League games. Liverpool have won one of the last four or five. So everything is in Arsenal's favour here. And I just think it's an opportunity to make a statement, take advantage of the inherent weaknesses in the Liverpool team. I mean, they made six changes tonight, haven't you, Glenn? You've been watching the match, haven't you?
Yeah. Van Dijk's injured or ill or sick or something. Maybe it's finished then. No. He's Chelsea 11th. They're not even.
And Chelsea no great shakes either. So I think it's a real opportunity. I think it will be a real statement for Arsenal to go there and win. And you'd also have the added pleasure of making it less likely that Liverpool will get a Champions League place.
Absolutely. Lauren, you're Mikel Arteta at this moment. Who do you put in your front three? Because you've got Martinelli, spanking form, Jesus, Saka, Trossard. Scratch of the head.
It's a tough one. I mean, obviously Saka's starting as long as he's fit and well. That's a given for me. Martinelli as well. And to be honest, I'm probably going to start Jesus. I think he showed enough in the last game. Give him the 60 minutes and then bring on Trossard and, let the tired defenders deal with what he brings. So I think it's a great situation for Mikel Arteta to be in. And whatever he does, I trust. The last game against Liverpool, he played Tomiyasu as a left back, and that was a stroke of genius. So, let's wait and see what he does this time around.
Yeah, he's a bit of a magician when it comes to that type of thing. Jay, how do you see the match going? Do you think early goal, get in control, start hammering it out? What's your thoughts?
I think against City at the weekend, they played. Trent was very advanced, and I think Robertson was also very advanced, and it left huge gaps along the back four or three or whatever it was meant to be anyway. And City in the second half just played through them. And all of City's goals were all from all of about 6-7 yards out. Liverpool made it so easy for them because they were so open. And I think Liverpool at the moment have only really got one way to play, and it is that way. And I think especially at home, I think we'll see a similar setup, and I think that'll play right into our hands. I think it will mean Xhaka can get forward. It will mean Odegaard can get forward and support Jesus. And I would go with Martinelli on the left, Saka on the right, and I'd leave Trossard on the bench to come on, just because I think Martinelli's pace can really peg back Trent. And I think in the centre of midfield as well, if party. It could be another one of his, you know, season defining performances. You know, he was immense at the Spurs stadium, you know, and he's really stepped up in other games this season where, you know, he's ran the show. And I think we could see a similar situation like that. Saying all of that, Liverpool are still Liverpool and it's still a formidable place to go. You know, for me personally, it's the start of the running. You know, these last two games, Palace and Leeds have been you know, I wouldn't say comfortable, but as you know, as maybe as comfortable as we would hope in before a tough run of games like we've got. I would have liked Saliba back, but like Glenn said, and like we've all said, you know, Rob Holding's done really well. Liverpool still have a lot of attacking quality. Salah's still, I mean, people are saying he's having a bad season and he's got, what is it, 17 goals or something like that, 17, 18 goals. Ridiculously consistent. Jota's playing again now. They've got Nunes, who's had a, you know, an indifferent season, but still a threat. Firmino, still, you know, he always seems to score against us as well. So it's going to be a tough game, but I mean, ultimately, if we come away from there with a win, like Paul said, that's a statement. And that's there's three games for me that are the real tests. You know, this is one of them. City, obviously, and the Newcastle game. If we can come through this, unreal. If we can get a draw, not the worst result in the season. But City will drop points in the run-in. We will drop points in the run-in. We just got to trust the players that have been so consistent this year, and they've stepped up. And they've, you know, there's obviously we haven't won every game, but we have righted a lot of the wrongs from last season. We've gone to, we've beaten Liverpool, we went to Chelsea and won, we went to Spurs and won, and Anfield is a place that we've not been particularly good at, and you know, results haven't gone our way there. You know, it's not been a good place for us in recent seasons. So why not? Why can't we go there and win? You know, the quality's there. We've seen it. We've seen it week in, week out. Tough game. But I think we can go there and win. And we've got to be confident, haven't we? You know, seven wins on the bounce with all the goals that we've scored. And, you know, a fit world-class striker up front playing for us again, you know. So let's attack it head on.
I always judge the Anfield gig by the 89-1. We weren't given a dog's chance of winning that, and we had to win by two clear goals. So I think absolutely anything is possible in football from that point of view. Paul, you enjoyed that game, didn't you? Glenn.
Just say one thing there as well. I mean, everything it'd be worthwhile bringing George Graham on that trip to Anfield at the weekend, getting him just to talk the players through that 2-0 win, just give them an idea of, you know, what it was like to what it would feel like to go to Anfield and win.
Well, it's quite interesting as well, because when you watch 89 and he says about the choosing the team, and he's got three centre-backs and he's got the sort of wing-backs full of advanced, and everyone thought he'd lost the plot and was going mad, or he'd lost his bottle or anything. Glenn, not that we care. We don't care. But Liverpool, what's gone wrong there? They've got a really good manager. Is it a failure to kind of upgrade the team last summer? Is it just because they're all getting too old? Or is it something's gone missing, hasn't it? There's that winning mentality has disappeared. What is it?
I think the key thing in what Jay just said was the word consistency. And the difference between those two teams is that Arsenal, for the first time in years, have been really consistent, and Liverpool for the first 7 years have been really inconsistent. And I think the root of that problem is both the things you mentioned. I think, yes, they're getting on a bit, they're an aging team, but also, you know, why do you sell your best striker and not replace him? I mean, Darwin, you know, the footballer of that evolution for God, he's no replacement, in my view. I mean, some people rate him, but I think so. I think it's a mixture of personnel and the fact that, you know, some of them are getting on a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, Podders, we've only got a couple of bits left for you. We're going to start by, now Saka is apparently about to sign on the dotted line in a deal reported to be worth £300,000 a week. Some are saying Arsenal haven't learned, Lauren, from their previous mistakes of paying mega bucks. and getting caught napping. It's a staggering amount for a 21-year-old. Value for money, or are we going down the same track again? Just being devil's advocate.
Yeah. He's worth every penny. Give him more. Whatever he wants, give it to him. You know, I think we talked about players there earlier, you know, the legends of the Emirates era, and Saka has everything about him to become that player. He's not there yet, obviously. He's 21. We haven't really achieved anything. But if things keep going the way that they're going, you know, and to be honest, I don't really see him go. I don't think the issue is him wanting to leave Arsenal. I think, you know, he's probably trying to push it out to get as much money as he can. But you know, whatever he wants, give it to him, and no one will be complaining. He's been player of the season for the last two seasons, arguably the player of, not just, you know, the Arsenal player of the season this year. He's probably the best player in England, the most consistent player in England. Even the goal that Xhaka scored over the weekend, you know, Xhaka was able to pull four Leeds players around him. It says everything you need to know about the guy. He's unstoppable at the moment. There's just this aura about him. Whatever he wants, give it to him. We'll never learn.
Jay, now, I mean, it's, if we didn't pay him this type of money, someone else would, and we'd lose yet another gem in the crown, wouldn't we, really? So is it one of those where we just have to step up to the plate and bite the bullet?
I mean, I can't add anything more to what Lauren said. He's been an unbelievable player. We speak about him every week. Great human being, role model. Ambassador, England star, you know, and he deserves everything he's going to get, you know. And we also have to look after, you know, you hate to say it, but he's a valuable asset as well, isn't he? So tie him down to a contract. So, you know, nobody comes in and steals him from underneath us. So look, we all know what he's like. He's loved by neutrals, when I say every week, but he's immense. And he's, again, like I said last week or the week before, he's going to be absolutely key to everything that we're going to do in the next 9 games. If he performs, there's a strong chance we'll win the league. So he's that important.
Well, he's had a lot of responsibility put on his shoulders as well. I mean, it's been incredible that he's had to kind of develop and bring his game on under such pressure, because he was invaluable to us last season. Paul, anything to add to that about Saka getting an absolute fortune at the age of 21? How we'd all love to do it, wouldn't we? If only I was good with my football.
No, I think Jane Lomer made the case perfectly. I think, as Glenn said before, you don't sell your best players. And I think the difference with the Saka deal is compared to Ozil and players like that is this guy's only 21. He's got his best football years ahead of him. They're not behind, they're ahead of him. So, you know, for the next 4 or 5 years, he could be a crucial figure if you're thinking long term, you know, Champions League finals, you know, pushing for further Premier League title. So he's embedded with the Arsenal DNA. He's come through under Arteta. So, you know, to me, you pay your best players the going rate. And you know, Jay, you mentioned before about, you know, Real Madrid being a big club than Arsenal. What you wouldn't want is someone like Real Madrid coming, you know, in the summer with a mega bid to tempt them away. But yeah, as Lauren says, just paying the money.
Well, there was a lovely little story from Jack Wilshere. Cesc Fabregas turned up at training and Saka went over there in his little humble way and asked Cesc for advice and whether he was doing okay. It just kind of shows what the lad is, doesn't it, Glenn? He's a very humble, laid-back, polite individual, but he's got that core Arsenal DNA, which is so important. We're starting to bring these players through now, and it's a joy to see, isn't it?
Fantastic. And I think what you see is what you get with him. I think he genuinely is all those things. And he is a great role model. And he is, you know, he seems to be humble. And he has humility, which is, in my view, a sign of greatness. It's fantastic to see. And Jay was saying it's vital to us for the next 10 games. But let's think about the next 5 or 10 years. Because he is going to be, you know, he's so young. He's actually going to get better, which is quite a scary thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Glenn, what type of player can he become? Let's pick a name out of the Arsenal past, Arsenal history, and say who he could be like.
Jordi Armstrong.
Because he's got elements of other players from the past, hasn't he? He's got a bit of Bloomberg, he's got a bit of Pires, he's got some real skills of Henri as well, all welded in there.
Yeah, and it's got steel, you know, unlike some of our players in recent years, not those players from that time. You know, that you know, remember that awful defeat at Crystal Palace? I think it was 3-0. And one of the headlines in the papers the next day was Eagles 3, Butterflies 0. You know, we were so soft, and we're not anymore. And he's one of the reasons, plenty of other reasons as well, elsewhere, you know, midfield effects. But Saka is remarkably strong, particularly for such a young player. And the challenges bounce off him, which is fantastic. He's got all those fantastic skills, but he's also got that strength, and he'll get stronger.
Yeah, it's nice to see these youngsters like beef up and go in the gym. And I mean, Nketiah was the one that surprised me. There he was, like a scrawny 12-year-old. And then he was like practicing for Mr. Universe. It was incredible. Right then, we've got rumours still about Declan Rice. Where does he fit in? Is he a replacement for Xhaka? Because there are rumours that Xhaka is going to be swapped for Dusan Vlahovic. Jay, we'll give you that one. That's a nice, juicy, pathetic rumour. But, where do you stand with this? Because Vlahovic turned us down. We weren't good enough at the time. My point of view might not be your point of view, but I just think, no way. I'm not interested in you. You turned us down when we were struggling, and now you want to come in because we're on the verge of maybe achieving something really remarkable. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. He certainly doesn't fit the person characteristic type of player that we've gone for, does he? You know, like that Edu's gone on about, you know, when we've gone in for certain players, you know, he's publicly come out and said that, you know, if they don't give him the right vibes, or if they're interested in different, you know, more personal goals than team goals, then they leave these signings well alone. And obviously just leave Vlahovic alone. I'd definitely go for Rice, said it every pod, you know, go for him. Doesn't mean you have to sell Xhaka, keep him. You know, we're going to be in the Champions League next season. We're going to need a strong, you know, and we're going to be, fingers crossed, in a title race again. And you need as many good players as possible. So it doesn't mean that we have to get rid of Xhaka if we sign Rice. Keep them both. I mean, Xhaka is up there for player of the season. You know, you certainly don't get rid of your player of the season. So leave Vlahovic alone. There are good strikers elsewhere that we could bring in if we need to.
Xhaka's got 7 out of 7 now. I mean, that's his highest goal tally as well. He's playing like a demon. I didn't realise, we've said best before, didn't realise that he was this type of player. He was for his country, but never for Arsenal. No one could get a tune out of him. He was like an unstrung guitar. So impressive. And I can see him actually finishing his career at Arsenal. Glenn, sorry, you're going to say something.
I was going to say, anyone who turns down Arsenal can get stuffed. And as for Declan Rice, I think he is actually an Arsenal player. I think he would fit in almost immediately into that, you know, that Arteta mould. And I agree with Jay, you know, you don't have to sell Xhaka or anyone else to fit in Declan Rice. And there's room for all of them. Because we are hopefully going to have a lot of games this season.
Right, I'm going to finish off the podcast family by doing the predictions for the Liverpool game. I'm going to start first. I'm going to say we're going to go to Anfield. The mighty roar of Anfield. We're going to shut them up and we're going to come back 2-1 winners. Mr. Paul McParland, what's your slant on this? You can exaggerate as much as you like, to be honest.
I think it'll be 89 viewers and said 2-0 to Arsenal.
Wow. Lauren, this is your favourite bit.
Love it always. it's one of those games that could go... anyway, I really do think that, to be honest, I'd take a draw from it. I honestly would take a draw from it. So I'm going to go for 2-2 prediction. That's where I'm going.
Yeah, draw's not too sad. We'll take that. It just keeps us going. Jay?
I'm going to go for 3-1 win.
And finally, Glenn.
I am very superstitious about making predictions.
You don't have to. Don't jinx it on our behalf.
just say Arsenal win. I think we'll win.
Well, that sounds good enough, doesn't it?
Australia 3-1. I think we'll win. We'll definitely win.
That's all we need is the result. I mean, you know, a draw or a win, that will do us. Podcast family, we're racing towards the finish line. You can see it there, can't you? It's interesting. We're getting
Tom, before we go, can we just talk about Keane's goal last night against Spurs?
Please. Absolutely. Yeah, fire away.
Can we just ask Paul, what was it like? What was it like when that went?
Jay, it was absolute bedlam. It was absolutely fantastic because I mean, Michael Keane, you know, is a very unlikely scorer of Everton, but when he scores from one of the goals. He scored the goal that goes back in the game against Paris last season. And as he was going towards the penalty area, you know, you think, what's he going to do? And he just unleashed a shot of such power, the swerve on the top into the net. And yeah, it was an absolutely superb goal. And yeah, if you watch on TV, you can probably get a sense of how noisy it was when that goal went in. Yeah. And you know, I thought we deserved it because I thought we played better with 10 men than Tottenham did with 11. And we absolutely pulverised in the last 15, 20 minutes. And we possibly could have got 3 points on the draw. But yeah, it was a fantastic feeling. And, you know, it's like sometimes when it's a game where everything's going against you. You've had a man sent off, you've had a penalty given against you. You're down to 10 men. The clock's winding down. And you get a last gasp equaliser from the most unlikely source. And it almost feels like a win when you come out of the ground. So yeah, Jay, it was absolutely brilliant. I'm so sad. I've watched it about four times again today. It was absolutely brilliant goal. And if one of the Arsenal centre backs can come up with a goal like that on Sunday, I should be celebrating with you.
I hope it's Rob Holding.
Imagine. That would be brilliant. That would be superb.
Rob Holding, the mystery man, just turns up at last minute.
Screaming.
Guys, it's been brilliant. Thank you very much. I've got all sorts of crap come up on my screen, so I can't really see you or myself. But thanks very much for joining us. Podcast family, thank you for your subscriptions. Thank you for your increased viewership and listenership. And we will see you next time around. Thanks very much. Take care. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
Bye, everyone. Cheers. Thank you.
Bye.
From the Arsenal archives, 5th of April 2003, the longest unbeaten away sequence in league football of 27 games begins with an own goal, oh no, by Kolo Touré in a match against Aston Villa. It was balanced out, though, by a goal right at the end by Freddie Ljungberg. We love you, Freddie. 5th of April 2007, ITV sold its 10% shareholding in Arsenal to Stan Kroenke. What a bargain that was. It had paid $50 million for the shares in 2004 and sold it for $38 million. ITV also started the process of selling its stake in Arsenal Broadband, which was completed a year later. No figures on that one. 8th of April 1975, with six games to go, Arsenal could still be drawn into a relegation mix, but a 2-0 win over Coventry City eased any of those concerns. Although the accountants wouldn't have been happy back then with an attendance of 17,291 in the ground. 23rd of April in the year of our God 2000, Arsene Wenger, stand by your bed, stand to attention, criticised the FA for allowing Manchester United a winter break from the league and a non-appearance in the FA Cup just in order to play in the FIFA Confederations competition, whatever that nonsense is. 25th of April 1939, Archie Leach died. He's remembered as one of the prime architects of Highbury, but also should be remembered for his work at the Manor Ground in Plumstead. Henry Norris, for those who know their Arsenal history, also employed him to work at Fulham while he was also, at the same time, the very same time, working at Stamford Bridge. Here are a quick list of the stadiums he's involved in. Anfield, obviously Highbury, Ayresome Park, Middlesbrough, Bramall Lane, Sheffield, Cardiff Arms Park, Cardiff, Celtic Park, Glasgow, Craven Cottage, Deepdale, Preston, the Old Den, do you remember that? New Cross, take your life in your hands. Villa Park, West Ham, and Shite Fart Lane, just up the road. More jiggery pokery behind the scenes at Arsenal. Edu Gaspar is apparently to be given extra powers. How does that work? What is he, a superhero? By the Kroenkes, given extra powers by the Kroenkes in yet another reshuffle to help improve recruitment. The Mirror has laughingly referred to the new setup as a football intelligence unit that comprises of first team scout Mark Curtis, data analytics specialist Tolly Coburn, sounds like a drink, And loans manager Ben Napper are also expected to be given significant roles in a revamped department. Now, did you see that goal by Jack Wilshere? Oh, World 11 versus Rangers. The boy still has it in spades. It was from a stunning pass left of midfield by Robin van Persie. You can get your booze out right now. And it went right through the defence. Jack picked it up and tucked it in, made it look so easy. He's got so much quality still. Such a shame he's not playing. But look it up on YouTube. It's there. Arsene Wenger has been inducted into the Premier League Hall of Fame, and so he should be. Mikel Arteta has acknowledged and congratulated Wenger, paying tribute to someone whom he learned from over a five-year stint together. Wenger has been inducted alongside his long-term arch-rival, Sir Alex Ferguson, and the pair became the first managers to be bestowed the highest individual honour awarded by the league. Ferguson said, "I feel Arsene is a very worthy inductee as he transformed Arsenal Football Club fantastically. They became a very tough team to compete with and we both wanted to win, which motivated us further." Did he say all this? Did he? Normally it's just like... "Through the years since retirement, we'd go to dinner together to a little restaurant he knows well in Switzerland." Oh, yes, all right for Sam, isn't it? "He is a really interesting man and I enjoy his company, but it's still my job to pick the wine." Wenger said, "Stand by your bed. To share this with Sir Alex is a great honour for me. Like two boxers, you fight like mad and go the distance together. At the end of the day, you have respect and it will be a great opportunity to meet up with him and share a good bottle of wine and memories of our old battles."
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
My thanks to Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter as SilentDave101. That's also the home of Jay, who goes under the Ball Gooner. Paul is at PMACCAP. Lauren is at LaurenD2710. And Tom is at ThomasAnastasi3. You can also look up our brothers from across the pond, Nick, Ben and Kevin. They're at the Arsenal Bros. Shout outs to Brandon Murphy, Simon Deasy of Gunners for Life, which is twin to the podcast, and Dave Miller from the Arsenal Attic. Look up ArseDevils for the latest features and breaking Arsenal news. The podcast is available on every social media outlet, including Twitter and TikTok, and you can follow, like, or download on Spotify, Apple, or Anchor. This episode was brought to you by Manscaped.com and the Performance Package 4.0, the best below-the-waist grooming kit. Want to get in touch? It's an Arsenal Thing 4 at gmail.com. Until next time, look after yourselves and each other, and remember, North London is red. Believe.